south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Hey, you know, with all the craziness going on with the markets and the financial sector, historic inflation, insurmountable sovereign debt, practically every country technically bankrupt, I bet you wonder what's going on with the banking sector in Latin America. Well, you know, it's always been the case that if you're dealing with the local funny money in whatever Latin American country, you can get really high rate CDs. For example, just checked out a few banks in five different Latin countries, and in the local funny money, you can get usually around a 12 to 15% interest rate for a one-year CD. Sounds good, right? Maybe even great, because it's one of the few investments that beats inflation. Or seemingly so, since the so-called official inflation rate's around 8 to 9%, right? However, anyone who's got half a brain who's done any investigating at all will know that the real inflation rate's around double that. Just go to shadowstats.com and you'll see how the real rate of inflation's calculated. The way they used to do it, from around 1920 to about 1996. If you recalculate today's inflation using the old stats they used for, what, 80 years? It's about double what U.S. economists say it is today. Yeah, right. The science of economics. It's not a science. It's a black art. Don't get me started. Economists, please. All they're really qualified for is navel-gazing and cleaning toilets at the Greyhound station. But you knew that already, right? Anyway, I just checked out a few banks in five different Latin countries with their own funny money, ones that don't use the U.S. dollar. And I found you could get one-year CDs paying up to 15% interest in the local funny money. Of course, they always have a dollar-denominated CD at the same bank. They got them both. Local funny money and funny money dollar CDs with one-month, three-month, six-month, or one-year terms. And I'm finding that a lot of these banks will pay 7.5% interest on a one-year CD in U.S. dollars. And some of them allow you to put down as little as $1,000. Think of it. Imagine being able to get 7.5% interest in a U.S. bank. That'll never happen. You're lucky to get 1.5%. In other words, if you're up in the States and get a bank CD, you're going to get killed by inflation no matter what you do. Though much less so if you take out a CD here in Latin America denominated in U.S. dollars. Inflation's still going to nick away at you, but not nearly as bad as up in the States. So then, if you've got some idle cash laying around, do I recommend it? Hey, that's your call. But I wouldn't do it. Never long term, anyway. Now, if you have some loose cash laying around, just sitting there, and you don't want to put it under your mattress, you could put it into a 30-day or 90-day note and keep rolling it over. Then you're always pretty liquid. As for me, I'm not comfortable with going out any farther than 3 months. A year would be nuts. Just my opinion here. That's my comfort zone. And about the local funny money CDs at 15%, man, awful tempting, right? We all know how the dollar's getting gouged by inflation. The problem is most local funny monies are getting hit twice as hard. Fact is, in Latin America, there are only two or three countries out of the 20 whose local funny money has held its own against the dollar over the past 10 or 20 years. And one of them happens to be Guatemala, the Quetzal. It all seems to be a mystery. Why do some Latin American funny money currencies lose value against other currencies so quickly year over year? I mean, look, they all have huge debts to the IMF, the World Bank, the US, and China. They've all got their own printing presses running too, just like the US. Though not at hyperspeed like Venezuela, and we know what happened to them. The question I'm asked all the time is, why does the Quetzal, Guatemala's funny money, hold its value against the U.S. dollar for 20 years? And Colombia, a country with its own manufacturing base, much greater GDP and all that, a much richer country in general, their peso has lost 60% against the U.S. dollar in just the last 10 years. Yet the Guatemalan Quetzal over the last 10 years has lost less than 3% against the U.S. dollar. That's a 60% devaluation for the Colombian peso versus 3 or less than 3% for the Guatemalan Quetzal. That means if 10 years ago you went to a Guatemalan bank, bought a Guatemalan CD, let's say, for $1,000 in Quetzals, the local funny money currency, and kept rolling it over every year at 15% interest, and at the end of 10 years, flipped it back into U.S. dollars, you'd have turned that initial grand into $4,000. And if during that time, the annual inflation rate was 2% a year, and it was about that if you average it out over the last 10 years, excluding these last few months where inflation has zoomed, it's gone crazy. Anyway, your rate of return on a grand over 10 years at 15% with 2% inflation would still be $3,300, or 3.3 times the initial investment. That's a 330% return. Now, if you would have taken out the same kind of CD in Colombia using Colombian pesos 10 years ago, figuring 2% inflation per year, if you flipped it back into dollars at the end of 10 years, your final balance would be $1,320. So if you'd had that 10-year CD in Colombian pesos, you'd have come out 25% wealthier based on 2% inflation. However, if you'd had that 10-year CD in Guatemalan quetzales, you'd have come out 330% wealthier. A huge difference, almost like winning the lottery. But in the end, it's just the luck of the draw, kind of like gambling, because nobody knows which Latin American currency is going to dump harder than the next one. Which is why, for me anyway, I'd never put money into a long-term CD in any of the local Latin American funny money denominations. Though if it's only for a month to 3 months, that could work. That way, if you see the currency starting to take a big hit, you could pull it out quickly without a penalty. Oh, and remember, this is key. Never do business at a Latin American bank that has a branch in the U.S. You know why, right? Because if they do have a branch in the U.S., like, for example, lots of Scotia banks down here in Latin America, Citibank too. Stay clear of those. That means if someone has a judgment against you in the States, and you're using Scotiabank or Citibank or another bank that's got a branch in the U.S., might be back home, you're involved in a bankruptcy, divorce proceedings, you're caught in an ongoing lawsuit or IRS problem, doesn't matter. A judge or just a phone call from the IRS could lock up your bank account. But that can never happen if your foreign bank does not have a branch in the U.S. The only way anyone can lock up your foreign bank account if it doesn't have a U.S. branch is to get a court order from a judge in your foreign jurisdiction. That means who's ever going after you has to come down, hire some Latin lawyers, and present their case to the judge all over again. And it's got to be in Spanish, and all the documentation has got to be translated into Spanish too. And of course, as you know, in Latin America, well, maybe you don't, cases drag out for years. Even simple civil cases can get postponed 5 or 6 times before the judge makes a decision. By the way, just a few weeks ago, I asked a Latino lawyer friend of mine who has been practicing at least 25 years. He's got lots of gringo clients. I would say at least 100. I asked him how many times a gringo's bank account has been locked up due to a court order coming from the States. In other words, they'd have to go through that rigmarole of sending lawyers down, hiring Latino lawyers to translate all the documents, etc., etc. He said he only knew of one case in 25 years. It was a drug and money laundering case. A really big fish, too, and it wasn't a client of his. Other than that, he said, just for regular gringos and expats coming to live in Latin America, he doesn't know of a single case. But back to this business of getting high interest rates on CDs in Latin American banks. The point is, don't go drooling over those high interest rates. They're real, all right. It's just that so many gringos are enticed by that high interest rate bait that they know they could never get in a bank up in the States. A lot of them feel so lucky such a thing exists, they charge right in. 6 months, a year, or two, even 5. I say the gain ain't worth the pain. The pain of the stress you get worrying about the currency fluctuations and the state of the local economy. Just look at Argentina. About every 10 years, it falls into a complete economic black hole. If you had a nice high interest rate U.S. dollar CD there, when it came to term, you'd get your dough from the bank. But government banking laws say now you can only pull out $200 a month. See what I mean? Just saying. And now with new international economic catastrophes on the horizon in practically every country, I'd be even less inclined to lock up any dough in a bank CD. By the way, did you know that the Federal Reserve, those slugs responsible for the economic train wreck that's unfolding right now, did you know that since they're so disliked in the media now, they've got such a bad reputation with the public? They spent over $1 million to hire a PR and image consulting firm. If anyone needs an image makeover, besides Hunter Biden's dad, who could also use a brain transplant, too. It's the Federal Reserve. Yeah, you know, there are image consulting companies out there that promise 101 ways to polish a turd. Well, guess what? They started polishing the turd with a new touchy-feely Federal Reserve website. It's called About the Fed, Meet Our Economists. Sounds so warm, so welcoming, so leave it to Beaver. And if you look at that site, they've got a picture and resume of all 400 loser PhD shit for brains economists on the payroll. So if you want to see a mugshot of all the incompetent asses responsible for the economic implosion and all that inflation, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you the link. The question is, would you want your face prominently displayed on the website of an organization that's such a miserable failure? I'd be ashamed and embarrassed. Oh well. I guess these days all government and quasi-government slugs get participation trophies. All right, now, from the Poe Folks Have Poe Habits Department, Lizzie sends me this email from California. She says, Johnny, you talked about how poor folks have poor habits. And when people from poor countries come to America, they bring those habits with them. You're right. In Latin America, in Mexico at least, littering is a way of life. If you like the outdoors like I do, littering, it's one of the poest of bad habits. I'm a surfer, and I've surfed up and down the Pacific coast of Mexico. Unfortunately, I get to see the worst of it. You mentioned on one of your shows how people leave litter in the streets, on buses, how previously empty lots suddenly turn into ad hoc garbage dumps, how during the rainy season, streets and gutters are suddenly filled with all manner of floating junk food bags and plastic bottles. Johnny, as a surfer, I get to see, surf, and even swim through people's accumulated garbage. Sometimes it even rubs up against me. It's disgusting. It breaks my heart to see how people leave piles of junk on beaches, especially in the days after a holiday weekend, when working-class Latino city folks have an extra day off and they hit the beaches. She says, I can't tell you how many times my heart sank when I've been on my surfboard watching empty bags and styrofoam plates swirl by. If you're a snorkeler, it's even worse. It's sad to look down on the seafloor to see Coke cans and plastic bottles half submerged in the sand. She says very few restaurants or food vendors, unless they're gringo or European owned, use biodegradable containers because either they're so expensive or just unavailable or no one cares. Tupperware, styrofoam, plastic bags, and plastic bottles are part of Latino culture. But in their defense, if there is such a thing, I've done Mount Everest too. Didn't get to the top, but I tried. All the way up, as you get close to the summit, there's plastic bottles and garbage wedged in the crevices too. Something to write home about. Ancient Pepsi and Coke cans at 20,000 feet. There's my rant, Johnny. Keep up the good work. All right, me, Johnny here. Lizzie, you'll be glad to know I'm doing my part to save the planet. As hard as it was to make the change, I'm an exclusive user of paper straws now. Where's my participation trophy? By the way, paper straws are a complete failure when it comes to spitballs. You know, Lizzie, I say that as a joke, but you know, your surfboard, any surfboard, it's made out of synthetic materials, fiberglass, laminated wood, petroleum-based glues and petroleum-based polyethylene coatings. And how about your sandals? Are they made out of tree bark or hemp? Nope, mostly plastic, right? Just like your belts, shoes, and purses. And your iPhone, made by slave labor in China. Look it up. I suppose you bike everywhere instead of taking a bus that was also fabricated in China and it's got petroleum-based seats, floors, doors, steering wheels, windows. Lizzie, I'm not picking on you in particular, but in reality, we're all a bunch of hypocrites, aren't we? Sure, we all got to try to do our part, but sometimes the worst of us are the ones that squawk about it the most. Like DiCaprio, Bono, and the rest of those Hollywood idiots, telling us to separate our garbage while they fly around in Learjets. Though, Lizzie, I'm totally with you on the garbage pollution thing and how Poe folks bring their Poe habits everywhere they go. Now, in this email, Lizzie sent me a link to a very interesting article. Oddly enough, it talks about woke journalists in the States when they get down to Latin America to do a story, especially when they're reporting on illegal immigration, caravans, and all that stuff. Over and over again, they fail to mention the elephant in the room. The mounds of trash illegals leave behind as they move their caravans from country to country. They do the same thing when they end up in the States. Let me read part of this to you. It's entitled The Mexican Littering Habit. It starts out, the Mexican cultural trait of littering is well known to everyone except American journalists. The truth about the rampant littering problem of Mexican illegal immigrants mostly slips out in the non-traditional media. You'll see it in the comment sections of hiking blogs, for example. They're a hotbed of unfiltered reporting. Then it says, after Labor Day weekend, one hiker's blog reported, In one Southern California canyon alone, they never mention which one, but it certainly looks like East Fork in the San Gabriel River in the accompanying video, had upwards of 30,000 pounds of trash left behind in that 1 3-day weekend, et cetera, et cetera. Then Lizzie says, I'm a hiker too, and I see it all the time. She says, I have friends and have acquaintances who have farms on the Mexican-California border. They tell me if they don't go around weekly or monthly picking up all the garbage themselves, that whole swath would look like a dump. She says you can even see mounds of garbage appearing and disappearing on Google Maps. And when those mounds disappear, do you think it's the illegals doing the cleanup? Wrong. If you think in a million years they clean up after themselves, pop another peyote button, why don't you? Anyway, Johnny, she says you can read this on your show, but please, no last names. I don't want to get canceled, fired, or flogged for simply telling the truth. All right, Lizzie, thanks for that. Now, as for my opinion about all the garbage here in Latin America, it's ugly and it's an eyesore, but it's not getting worse. Little by little, it's getting better. You know, as these countries get wealthier and people are pulled up out of poverty, you'll notice, that is if you're down here with boots on the ground, the middle-class neighborhoods have less garbage strewn around than the poorer neighborhoods. And the wealthy neighborhoods have less garbage than the middle-class neighborhoods. And it's not just because wealthy neighbors have gardeners to pick up things. Even the empty lots and streets and gutters are much cleaner. That means there's less and less garbage thrown around in public spaces, too. The reality is, as much as wokesters might hate the phrase, poor folks have poor habits, facts are facts. And it's a fact. As the general wealth of a country increases, so does their environmental IQ. By the way, I just read another sickening article out of Popular Mechanics. I used to subscribe to that as a kid. I'd get Popular Electronics, too. It was always the budding engineering types, us young kids interested in taking radios, clocks, and carburetors apart and making bombs, too. We're the ones who'd read Popular Science, Popular Mechanics, and Popular Electronics. Oh, and can I say this? Call me a sexist, call me a dick, but here's another fact. I never met a single girl who ever subscribed to Popular Mechanics or Electronics. I'd like to see those stats. That could send the wokesters over the edge. Thing is, I'm really surprised these days they've got enough subscribers to keep them in business. They're still out there, I'm surprised. I would have thought the internet and anti-social media would have wiped them out of existence. Anyway, in a new article from Popular Mechanics, the title of the article? Bad news for Earth. Rainwater is no longer safe to drink, thanks to plastics. The article says, recent studies conclude drinking rainwater could negatively impact human health around the world. It says, remember when you were a kid and it was fun to tip your head back during a rainstorm, open your mouth and drink the drops? Well, you shouldn't do that anymore. That's because you'll be ingesting way too many particles of perfluoral alkyl and polyfluoral alkyl substances, known as PFASs, forever chemicals. According to the study, Earth's rainwater is officially past its safe zone for plastic contamination. Isn't that lovely? It says, according to the August 2nd, 2022, Journal of Environmental Science and Technology, the atmospheric Earth's PFAS human toxicity boundary has been exceeded. At this point, it says, these forever chemicals are all over the globe and have seeded the atmosphere. Most importantly, they don't break down in the environment. Not for hundreds of years. It says, based on the latest U.S. guidelines for PFOAs in drinking water, rainwater everywhere would be judged unsafe to drink. And though industrial world people, that is first world people, don't often drink rainwater, many billions of people around the globe drink it, and it supplies many of our drinking water sources. After all, rainwater on mountaintops eventually ends up as fresh water in lakes. It's a long article, but in the end it says, sadly, there's evidence that FPOAs, forever chemicals in rain and freshwater, likely cause cancer in humans. By the way, I always recommend if you buy or build here in Latin America, you should always collect rainwater, just to have an extra supply in your cistern in case your subdivision neighborhood or municipality's well or water source goes on the blink or is down for repairs. Now, the way I've got my system set up, if I have to use the rainwater, it automatically detects a loss of pressure and kicks in. It gets diverted by its own separate pump to the tubing in the house. What ends up as drinking water goes through my 3-stage filter under the kitchen sink. And those 3 filters take out everything, including microplastics and those forever chemicals. So I'm covered. How about you? even though it's a scary thought and the media is just now reporting on it. All the rainwater in the world is contaminated. That means all the animals, the big game in the forest, drinking from the rivers and streams, too. They're saying now the whole food chain's contaminated. We always think of pure, crystal clear water coming from mountain streams, as pure as you can get it. And what about all the plants? They're absorbing all that stuff, too. I know. A lot of you are thinking, I've got enough to worry about. I don't want to hear about that crap. Out of sight, out of mind, right? And now, for some more bad news. An email that just came in from Bert, who says, "You are dead right about Costa Rica, Johnny. I tried it for a full year and I'm leaving." He says, "Johnny, if you're a freedom-loving capitalist leaning towards libertarianism, you won't like it there. It's not much better than the United States. It's lagging just a little, but catching up fast." He says, "Don't be confused when Americans think that Costa Rica is a place to hide from government regs and rules, woke social progress, or socialism itself. Many Americans are of the opinion you can go down there and just kind of fade into the surroundings, disappear. Live a nice, calm, unfettered life as it was in the States in the 70s and 80s. Well, maybe it was like that 20 or 30 years ago, but Costa Rica has become very socialist. They allow gay marriage now. There are woke people all over the Facebook sites. And I'm seeing more doctors who are willing to perform hormone therapy for trans individuals. In fact, there are many English-speaking blogs, journals, and newspapers where Costa Rican doctors actually advertise in English. They specialize in trans surgeries and hormone therapy for non-binaries and people who don't quite know what gender they are yet. What I'm saying, Johnny, is Costa Rica is not the place to live. If you want to recapture the life you lived in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, Costa Rica is not a good place to hide from U.S.-style social progress. They're all about copying everything the U.S. does, including vaccine mandates. Then he says, "When I came down to Costa Rica, I did find a nice little group of like-minded Americans living in Costa Rica, though they're all changing their mind about Costa Rica, too. Everyone's disappointed. Almost all of them are in agreement that they selected Costa Rica based on a couple of nice vacations. A big motivator was that most people spoke English. You didn't have to have Spanish to get around. But now, after being down here a while, a couple of years for some of them, and seeing reality, they wish someone would have told them that nice vacations are not good indicators of how life will be when you really move there. Thing is, Johnny, I told them there is a guy out there in the ether, a guy who does podcasts, who's been telling people that for years. A guy named Johnny. But some, maybe most, newbie expats have forceful personalities and therefore are stubborn. Once they've moved to a Latin American country, they hear about other people's mistakes but don't learn from them. They reinvent the wheel and make those same mistakes themselves. I'm guilty of that too, or I wouldn't be in Costa Rica. Love the show, Johnny. Signed, Bert. P.S. Because Costa Rica has a border with Panama, I've been back and forth to Panama 6 or 7 times. The people, the common people, are revolting. They are pissed off. They're not happy campers. Talking to Americans in Panama, they don't want to go out of their houses because there's a shortage of gas. They want to be stuck with an empty tank. No matter what you might read in the blogs, expats are very worried. Especially property owners, bragging about how prices have been skyrocketing lately. Well, the word is that expats are getting very restless in Panama. As for me, I'm looking at a plan C. It might be Guatemala, Salvador, the DR, I don't know. I promise, though, I'm never going back to the States. I hope going to your seminar will help me with that decision. I'm saving my colones. Hope to see you there. All right, thanks for that, Bert. Funny thing about most expats, you know, a lot of us are curious, damn the torpedo, straight-ahead chance-takers. We don't lean on other people too much. We make our decisions and live with them, good or bad. That sort of explains why so many people move to Mexico and Costa Rica, despite the dire warnings. I guess it's like buying a car. If you always like the look of, for example, a Range Rover or a Jeep, Lexus, Volvo, whatever. Some people just buy because they like the idea of that car. They like the look of it. Even when they check out consumer reports and find a Range Rover has a terrible repair record, they don't listen. They buy it anyway because that's what they always wanted. They had their heart set on it. Nothing will dissuade them. So they get it, and it looks nice in the driveway, but they end up using the 4-year-old Honda Civic to run errands. By the way, I'm looking at a chart that just came out. It's called The Most Expensive Cities to Live in Latin America and the Caribbean for 2022, put together by a site called Statistica.com. Now, this might shock you, but the top 8 on this list, I'll name them, according to the website Statistica, are more expensive than living in the average big city in the U.S. Number 1, Nassau, Bahamas. Number 2, San Juan, Puerto Rico. Yep, more expensive than the average city in the U.S. You can bet the Bitcoin and crypto guys are sort of responsible for that. Number three, Port of Spain. That's in Trinidad and Tobago. Well, we don't talk about them much. They're out of our wheelhouse, not in Latin America. Anyway, number four, shocker, Panama City. We're just talking about that, right? Number five, Havana, Cuba. We all know why that is, right? Because they got two currencies there, one for tourists and one for locals. And tourists get gouged to the bone. Number six, we're talking about the most expensive cities in the Caribbean and Latin America, Kingston, Jamaica. Number seven, no surprise, San Jose, Costa Rica. Number eight, Paramaribo. That's the capital of Suriname. By the way, if you've ever been to Suriname, and I've been there once, it's loaded with Dutch people who come for vacation to gamble. It's loaded with casinos. I don't recommend it, not to live anyway. It's so small and there's so little to do, you get bored in 3 days. What do you expect? The whole country's only got around 600,000 people. All right, the seventh most expensive city in Latin America and the Caribbean, Montevideo, Uruguay. Number eight, Santiago, Chile. So did that info sway you any? As for me, none of those places would be on my Plan B list. There are many more negatives besides the high cost of living. Anyway, Bert mentioned earlier that he was saving up his colones, you know, that's the Costa Rica funny money, to come to the next seminar. Well, the good news is I've got my seminar sign-up page ready to go. Just go to expatplanb.com for all the info and sign-up details. And remember, if you sign up before September 15th, about a month away now, you're in on the early bird discounts. You get $500 off the regular price. And of course, for you repeat offenders, we've always got those. You know the drill. You get $1,000 off the regular price. Oh, and just to repeat the dates, the seminar will be from Saturday, November 5th through Friday, November 11th. Hope to see you there. It'll be great fun. And finally, an email from longtime listener Jerry in California. He says, Johnny, I don't know why you're so anti-mask. I kind of like masks myself. Because, you see, when I'm out in public and I see someone wearing a mask, it's like the Scarlet Letter, a badge saying, I'm a moron. I'm not very bright. I'm a follower who believes everything the idiots in government tell me. A mask also says I've been triple, even quadruple vaxxed. I can't wait for the next jab. The thing is, Johnny, when a person's not wearing a mask, you have no idea if he's a moron or not. You can only guess. I, for one, would rather know for sure. So all you idiots out there, keep wearing those masks. All right, thanks for that, Jerry. I couldn't have said it better myself.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos. Latin America.